This is the voice of the Vortex. Hello. Today is February 8th, 2011. I was going to tell you all about Lois McMaster Bugeaud's Vorkosigan saga, which I read in November while the rest of you were sweating over your NaNoWriMo projects. For any fans of science fiction who have not read those books, I wholeheartedly recommend NaVorRimo, National Vorkosigan Reading Month. Unfortunately, I discovered that Joe Walton has already written a review of the series. And once Joe Walton has written on a topic, there's no point in somebody like me trying to do it again. Instead, I'd like to present for your approval the book that convinced me to read the Vorkosigan novels, Paladin of Souls. Okay, yes, Paladin of Souls is not only part of a completely different series, but a completely different genre, high fantasy. It's the second book in the Chalion series, about a world ruled by five gods and constantly under threat from demons. Ista, the protagonist, is getting old. She has checked all the boxes of a noblewoman's life. She married well. She had children, one of whom, a daughter, survived to adulthood and was married well in her turn. When the book opens, Ista has just finished mourning her own mother. Her husband is dead. Her children are dead or married. She is surrounded by people who want only to take care of her in the way that one takes care of a small child. Her life, as it has been prescribed by society, is over, but she is still alive. So she goes on a pilgrimage. Ista has been touched by the gods before. The world of Chalion is one where the gods are actively involved in the lives of their worshippers, though rarely as actively as they were in Ista's life. She has been touched by the gods, and she has been driven mad by the gods, so the pilgrimage is really just an excuse to see a bit more of the world before she dies. That plan lasts, oh, maybe an entire chapter, before her caravan is attacked and her real adventure begins. Ista is not an action hero. Her advantages, like a lot of Bugeaudian heroes, are all in her head. She's brilliant and she's brave, and she has to rely on that, rather than on strength or superpowers, to get her out of danger. It is interesting to see a noblewoman's social skills put at the center of a fantasy novel. A lesser writer might have shunted Ista to one side to make room for more fight scenes. Not that the novel lacks for fight scenes. There is even an especially nasty siege. Paladin of Souls is a relief from the legions of teenaged heroes meebling about whether they should take this boy or that boy to the apocalypse ball. Ista knows that romance is a waste of time, and that if you have a crush on a man and then find out that he's married, the proper response is to get over it and get on with your life. There is romance in Paladin of Souls, but it plays a more realistic role than one usually finds in fantasy literature. Despite being the second book in a fantasy series, Paladin of Souls stands on its own. It's a fine introduction to Bugeaud's writing, as she charges through the high fantasy setting, gleefully smashing cliches and worn-out tropes as she goes. I am told there will be five books in the series when it's done, one for each of the gods. Right now there are three books, The Curse of Chalion, Paladin of Souls, and The Hallowed Hunt. I don't usually read American comics. I find the art style off-putting, and the extreme violence nauseating. One exception is Freak Angels, a weekly webcomic by Warren Ellis and Paul Duffield. Freak Angels exists in the August tradition of British disaster fiction. Warren Ellis has written about why Brits enjoy reading about their island being crushed under the heel of space plants or the Martians or the glaciers. He says it's because they don't have any real existential threats to worry about. They don't get hurricanes or earthquakes or volcanoes, so surviving disasters makes for fun escapist literature. In Freak Angels, the England-ending disaster was a group of kids born at exactly the same moment, all with purple eyes, pale skin, and freaky powers. What exactly happened isn't clear, except that on one very bad day, 12 kids put their powers together and ended the world. Now they live in the flooded ruins of London, scraping a living from rooftop farms and whatever they can scavenge. In the meantime, they've had to expel one of their number for committing the ultimate crime. None of them are completely sane, but he was building an army of mind-controlled meat puppets, and that is simply unacceptable behavior. He was exiled, but now he's back, and that would make a lot more sense if two of the freak angels hadn't followed him out of town and shot him in the head. There are 3 years of archived Freak Angel comics, which is good, because the pacing of the comic is glacial at best. There are a lot of pages dedicated to scenery, meaningful looks, and people talking, which is good for the overall mood, but makes reading this comic week to week something of a challenge. Which isn't to say there is no action. The Freak Angels can kill you with their minds, and they are not shy about using their powers to defend their turf. Their biggest weakness is that they do not think things through. They never intended to end the world, and they never really made any long-term post-apocalypse plans, even after they realized what had happened. Freak Angels is a quiet, moody comic that occasionally suffers from a tendency towards over-the-top graphic violence, including a full frontal rape. However, it is not completely grim and has moments of laugh-out-loud humor. The chicken incident comes to mind, as well as the oh-why-not Gatling cannon that fires arrows. Because why not? The entire archive is available online for free. A link will be in the show notes, and I recommend checking it out. You may have heard about the lawsuit that has been brought against Taco Bell regarding the content of their quote-unquote beef. Now, leaving aside the issue of whether or not eating a tortilla of beef-flavored oat product is better for you than a tortilla of ground cow, this lawsuit illustrates one aspect of our regulatory system that I have ranted about in the past, and which the makers of dietary supplements are only too willing to exploit. Medicines are heavily regulated in the United States. That list of side effects on the drug commercials that everybody makes fun of is mandated by law. If you have a product and you are going to market it as a medicine, you must prove to the satisfaction of the relevant bureaucrats that your product is safe, that its benefits outweigh its side effects, and that your manufacturing processes are up to certain standards. On the other hand, as this lawsuit illustrates, while the government has rules about food, they often will not enforce them until somebody sues. Makers of herbal supplements successfully campaigned to have their products regulated as food. I could make a dietary supplement and claim that it contains the refined essence of whale slobber, and you would have to take me to court and win before the government would make me stop putting that claim on my labels. Even then, losing a lawsuit like that wouldn't necessarily stop me from making my whale slobber miracle health booster. The makers of Airborne lost a lawsuit a few years ago over the claims they were making on their packaging. They changed their labels, gave some people some refunds, and went back to swimming in their vaults full of cash. There are only 10 days left until NakaCon, Kansas City's finest anime convention. The guests this year include Amelie Belcher, Gavin Goska, and DJ Sephiroth. There will be anime showings, dancing, cosplay, video and tabletop gaming, and more fun than any reasonable person would try to have in a single weekend. I look forward to seeing you there. The Voice of the Vortex is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works, Sharealike 3.0 license. To comment on this episode, or to submit flash fiction for future shows, drop an email to voiceofthevortex, all one word, @gmail.com. Show notes are available at voiceofthevortex.podbean.com. This is Sarah Frost, the Voice of the Vortex, signing off.